Om Jnanatimirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha
Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Chaiva Narottamam Devim Sarasatim Vyasam Tato Jaya Mudiraye. Good morning, everybody. Hare Krishna. Welcome to everybody who just joined us online today for this very happy occasion where we have full permission to simply hear and chant with full concentration on the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. It's highly recommended. Otherwise, as mentioned early on in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Shrotavya Dini Rajendra Rinam Shanti Sahasrashaha, there are millions of topics that one can discuss in human society. And they're all about the same type of energy, the material energy. But for those who have come to the conclusion that there's nothing of value in this material world except the facility to hear and chant about Krishna, such topics related to the material world are anathema. So today I'm going to talk about a few subjects from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, in which the preaching of the topic of Krishna consciousness gives us some kind of lesson that we can apply in our own lives. And of course, the Srimad Bhagavatam third canto is vast. It's one of the largest cantos. But there are a few points I've picked out today in the time that we have to talk about. One to start with is just about the idea of preaching in general. If you look it up in the dictionary, it has a lot to do with a religious context. But a synonym really is teaching. And why teach Krishna consciousness to others? This is a general point that's important to understand. And in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Nachatasman manusheshu kashchin me priyakritamaha. He says that in human society, out of all the humans, the one that's most dear to him is the person who's teaching Krishna consciousness. In that context, he's teaching the message of Bhagavad Gita to other people, or he says to the devotees. And for those who understand the goal of life, samsidhir haritoshanam, is to please the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is faith, understanding that by doing that, all my desires, other desires will be fulfilled. Nothing else is needed, no separate endeavor except pleasing the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Even within the realm of devotional service, if I concentrate my activities on what's most pleasing to Krishna, then I will attain complete success. And we find something very touching in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. It's a interaction between Vidura and Uddhava, which I'll be mentioning a few times today. But Krishna is getting ready to leave the planet. And he's arranged for his entire dynasty to leave because they're very powerful personalities and he didn't want to leave them behind. And after arranging for that at Prabhas, they killed each other with iron rods that appeared as bamboo stalks, reeds actually that were growing in the water, and they got in an argument that became inflamed, and they started beating each other and they killed each other off. How Krishna arranged for them to all leave. And then he retired to a forest nearby and was leaning against a young banyan tree. And he began to speak to Uddhava, who followed him there, who couldn't bear his separation. And a few moments later, Maitreya, just by good fortune, Prabhupada says, by agyata sukriti, because previously he must have performed some special spiritually based pious activities to be able to get this opportunity. I mean, how often do you get a chance to meet Krishna and Uddhava about to speak about spiritual topics in the forest? It doesn't happen by chance. Well, it just so happens that just as Krishna was preparing to leave the world, he remembered Vidura. He had Vidura in his heart because Vidura had become so dear to Krishna. And later on we find that when Vidura and Uddhava meet, Uddhava tells Vidura that Krishna's left the planet and he was remembering you just as he was leaving. If you can imagine such a thing, that's who he was remembering, Vidura. And tears came to Vidura's eyes just thinking of this, that Krishna was remembering him. And so the spirit of the Bhagavatam, which we just read the second chapter of, is that one should please the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that one does so by serving the great souls. Shushu sho sharadhanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahat sevayavi prapunya tirta nishevanat. The result of that is that one gains an attraction for hearing about Krishna. And as I mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, one who teaches Krishna consciousness to others is the most dear to me. And this then forms the strategy, framework, by which one can actually enter into the hearts of the devotees, enter into Krishna's heart. That is, be thought of by Krishna, be thought of by the devotees, samsidhir haritoshanam. And especially by teaching Krishna consciousness to others, dedicating one's life to this process of awakening others to Krishna consciousness. This is what Krishna says is the most dear to him. And throughout the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we find that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates also adopted the same mood and method to teach others Krishna consciousness. So, here's a important factor in preaching, and it's mentioned in the third canto, fourth chapter. So I'm going to read verses 24 through 26. And this is after Uddhava and Vidura have met. Once upon a time, great sages were made angry by the sporting activities of the princely descendants of the Yadu and Bhoja dynasties. And thus, as desired by the Lord, the sages cursed them. Purport. The associates of the Lord who were playing the part of princely descendants of the Yadu and Bhoja dynasties were not ordinary living entities. It is not possible that they could offend any saintly man or sage, nor could the sages, who are all pure devotees of the Lord, be influenced to anger by any of the sporting activities of the princes born in the holy dynasties of Yadu and Bhoja, wherein the Lord himself appeared as a descendant. The cursing of the princes by the sages was another transcendental pastime of the Lord to make a show of anger. The princes were cursed in order that one may know that even the descendants of the Lord, who could never be vanquished by any act of material nature, were subjected to the reactions of anger by great devotees of the Lord. One should therefore take great care and attention not to commit an offense at the feet of a devotee of the Lord. 25. A few months passed, and then, bewildered by Krishna, all the descendants of Vrishni, Bhoja, and Antaka, who are incarnations of demigods, went to Prabhas, while those who were eternal devotees of the Lord did not leave but remained in Dwarka. Oh, I'm reading the wrong chapter. Sorry. That's 3:4:24. That was an interesting section, though. I mean, the third canto is so full of beautiful passages that you can't go wrong. But back to the point. 3:4:24. While Uddhava, the chief and most confidential amongst the devotees of the Lord, was going away, Vidura, in affection and confidence, questioned him. Purport. Vidura was much older than Uddhava. By family relationship, Uddhava was a contemporary brother of Krishna's, while Vidura was as elderly as Krishna's father, Vasudev. But although junior by age, Uddhava was much advanced in the devotional service of the Lord, and therefore he is described herein as the chief amongst the devotees of the Lord. Vidura was confident about this, and thus he addressed Uddhava in that higher category. That is the way of courteous dealings between two devotees. So specifically important here is the courteous dealings between the devotees. In the proper atmosphere, the transmission of the transcendental vibration takes place. And much of that has to do with the attitude of those who are teaching Krishna consciousness, as well as those who are listening. And there has to be a respect for both the speaker and the listener. And in this case, we find that although Vidura is older than Uddhava, he is nonetheless respecting his spiritual position. And this is a point that comes out in the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when speaking to the devotees, especially Mukunda, Raghunandan, and Sri Narahari, who are inhabitants of Sri Kanda, it's mentioned here, Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya 15:112, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the son of Mother Sachi, next asked Mukunda Das, "You are the father, and your son is Raghunandana. Is that so? Or is Srila Raghunandana your father, and you are his son? Please let me know the facts so that my doubts will go away." Mukunda replied, "Raghunandana is my father, and I am his son. This is my decision." All of us have attained devotion to Krishna due to Raghunandana. Therefore, in my mind, he is my father. Hearing Mukunda Das give this proper decision, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu confirmed it, saying, "Yes, it is correct. One who awakens devotion to Krishna is certainly the spiritual master." So we find this interesting juxtaposition in that here's the father and son, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is saying, "So who's the father and who's the son?" And then the father admits, "No, he's my father, and I'm his son." Of course, that doesn't mean that they'll switch their roles. There are two levels on which we operate. One has to do with ordinary dealings in the material world, Vyavaharika, and Paramartika has to do with the spiritual position and the ultimate goal of life. And this recognition of those who are advanced spiritually is an important framework through which one can hear Krishna consciousness and one can preach Krishna consciousness. As Krishna mentions in the Bhagavad Gita, tadvidi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadakshanti de jnanam jnaninas tatvadarshina. Anyone who's sincere about spiritual life can live from this verse by understanding the means by which one can become enlightened, and that is through one's attitude and one's approach towards those who are spiritually advanced, to him or her. And that means that one must be submissive. This is number one qualification, submission to the recognized spiritual authority. Tadvidi pranipatena priprashnena, and asking relevant questions. Actually, we can see that it's not easy to ask questions. Oftentimes, if you ask people, do you have any questions? They'll sit there and I don't have any questions. There has to be an extremely stimulated environment of speaking and hearing Krishna consciousness in which everyone's interested in the topic, interested in getting something from the topic, and therefore their interest is peaked, and therefore they're thinking, how do I get to the next level? And they're asking questions. So that kind of questioning has to be there. And absurd questions are not wanted. Just questioning for asking for information, but actually sincere inquiries. And sevaya means one must serve. Must serve the person who's doing the work. It's mentioned by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in the 11th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that the hearts of pure devotees are melted. In fact, he says, the contents of their heart flow like rivers of rose apple juice. And if one serves with body, mind, and soul without any expectation in return, except simply to honor the spiritual advancement of such a person, then the contents of the heart, that rose apple juice, which is nectarian, flows out to us, and we're able to take advantage of it. So we see, first of all, in this context of teaching Krishna consciousness, that there must be the proper attitude. Therefore, the last line of this purport, 3.4.24, Srila Prabhupada writes, this is the way of courteous dealings between two devotees. And they happen on two levels. One level is respecting the person's stature in the varnashram, for instance, or their age difference, and also their spiritual advancement. Because as we see, there are cases when the person's older, but the younger person is more advanced. Even Shukadeva Goswami, when he came to when he came to the bank of the Ganges with Maharaj Parikshit, was honored even by superiors in age. For instance, his father, Vyasadeva, was there, and thousands of other great sages, but they honored Shukadeva Goswami because he was qualified to speak. Similarly with Suta Goswami, the son of Romaharshan, Veta Tom Samya Tatsarvam, Tatvatas Tadanugrahat, Bruyus Nignasya Sishasya, Guruvo Gurumapyuta. And they mention, Shonaka mentions, that you're qualified to speak because you have properly honored all your gurus. Because you're gentle in nature, means he followed Tadvidi Pranipatena Priprashnena Sevaya, etc. Therefore, he was infused with this spiritual knowledge given by the mercy of his gurus. And now he had become qualified to speak in front of all these other senior people. Now he had become spiritually qualified. In the next verse, 25, Vidura said, O Uddhava, because the servants of Vishnu, the Lord, wander in the interest of serving others, it is quite fit that you kindly describe the self-knowledge with which you have been enlightened by the Lord himself. Purport, the servants of the Lord are actually the servants of society. They have no interest in human society other than to enlighten it in transcendental knowledge. They're interested in imparting knowledge of the relationship of the living being with the Supreme Lord. The activities in the transcendental relationship and the ultimate goal of life. You can recognize those as sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. So we find throughout the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that as various teachers are imparting the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, they go through this progression from sambandha, abhideya, and prayojana. For instance, later on we see when Devahuti approaches her son Kapiladeva and asks him for spiritual knowledge, he gives detailed knowledge of the way the material world works. And then he talks about the practice of Krishna consciousness. And then he talks about the ultimate goal of life. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also used this progression when teaching Prakashananda Saraswati and the other Mayavadis. And that he showed how the Vedas are explaining the progressive path leading to the ultimate goal, prema pumarta mahan, love of Krishna, but beginning with very clear definition of our relationship with Krishna, which also includes our relationship with the material world, the frailties of human existence, and the practice of Krishna consciousness, and then the ultimate goal. This is the real knowledge which can help society achieve the real aim of human welfare. Knowledge in the matter of the bodily necessities of eating, sleeping, mating, and fearing, transformed into various branches of advancement of knowledge, is all temporary. A living being is not the material body, but an eternal part and parcel of the Supreme Being, and this revival of his self-knowledge is essential. Without this knowledge, the human life is baffled. The servants of the Lord Vishnu are entrusted with this responsible work, and so they wander all over the earth and all over and to all other planets in the universe. Thus, the knowledge which was received by Uddhava directly from the Lord deserves to be distributed in human society, especially to persons like Vidura, who are highly advanced in devotional service to the Lord, especially to persons like Vidura. Real transcendental knowledge descends in the disciplic succession from the Lord to Uddhava, from Uddhava to Vidura, and so on. Such supreme transcendental knowledge is not possible to achieve by the process of imperfect speculation as performed by so-called learned mundane wranglers. Vidura was anxious to know from Uddhava that confidential knowledge known as Paramam, Paramam Stitam, in which the Lord is known by his transcendental pastimes. Although Vidura was older than Uddhava, he was anxious to become a servant of Uddhava in the transcendental relationship. This formula, note the word formula. Formulas are nice because you can transport them to other contexts, formulas and principles. This formula of transcendental succession is taught by Lord Chaitanya also. Lord Chaitanya advises that when received knowledge from anyone, whether a Brahmin, a Shudra, a householder, or a sannyasi, provided that the person is factually conversant in the science of Krishna, a person who knows the science of Krishna is factually a bona fide spiritual master. And of course, there's a very famous verse, Kiba Viprakiba Nyasi Shudra Kaninoi, Ye Krishna Tattva Veta She Guru Hoy, in which Lord Chaitanya says, whether one is a Brahmin, a sannyasi, a Shudra, regardless of what he is, he can become a spiritual master if he knows the science of Krishna. And I'll go more into that later, because the next verse is calling to us, and this is 26. Sri Uddhava said, you may take lessons from the great learned sage Maitreya, who is nearby and who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. He was directly instructed by the personality of Godhead while he was about to quit this mortal world. Purport. Although one may be well-versed in the transcendental science, one should be careful about the offense of maryada vitikrama, or impertinently surpassing a greater personality. According to scriptural injunction, one should be very careful of transgressing the law of maryada vitikrama, because by doing so, one loses his duration of life, his opulence, fame, and piety, and the blessings of all the world. What do you lose? opulence, piety, fame, and all the blessings of all the world. That's how important it is. The etiquette in teaching Krishna consciousness and in hearing Krishna consciousness, the environment is set. In other words, there's an etiquette in which the vibration of Krishna consciousness is readily imbibed. And there's an environment in which it is repelled. And that mood of surpassing others, argumentative moods and so forth, is not conducive to this teaching of Krishna consciousness. It must be done in an environment where there's great respect shown to the advanced devotees, and by the same token, respect shown to those who are hearing Krishna consciousness. Just a minute, I'll take reflections. To be well versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Again, to be well versed in the transcendental science necessitates awareness of the techniques of spiritual science. Uddhava, being well aware of these technicalities of transcendental science, advised Vidura to approach Maitreya Rishi to receive transcendental knowledge. Vidura wanted to accept Uddhava as his spiritual master, but Uddhava did not accept the post, because Vidura was as old as Uddhava's father, and therefore Uddhava could not accept him as his disciple, especially when Maitreya was present nearby. The rule is that in the presence of a higher personality, one should not be very eager to impart instructions, even if one is competent and well-versed. So Uddhava decided to send an elderly person like Vidura to Maitreya, another elderly person. But he was well versed also because he was directly instructed by the Lord while he was about to quit the mortal world. Since both Uddhava and Maitreya were directly instructed by the Lord, both had the authority to become the spiritual master of Vidura or anyone else. But Maitreya, being elderly, had the first claim to becoming the spiritual master, especially for Vidura, who was much older than Uddhava. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jignasu shre uttamam shadde paricha nishnatam brahman yupashramashrayam. The qualification of, first of all, there's an imperative, therefore, one is mentioned in the Srimad Bhagavatam, to advance spiritually, one has to approach a spiritual master. Tasmat gurum prapadyeta jignasu shreya uttamam, and one should inquire about one's ultimate good in life. Shabde paricha nishnatam, such a person must have taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge. As Prabhupada says, if you can take that imagery into your mind for a minute, must have taken a dip in the ocean of transcendental knowledge. Shabde parisha nishnatam, the person has heard sufficiently to become completely fixed in the practice of spiritual life. Brahman yupashramashrayam, and has no other business except for engaging in spiritual life. One should not be eager to become a spiritual master cheaply for the sake of profit and fame, but should become a spiritual master only for the service of the Lord. The Lord never tolerates the impertinence of maryada vitikrama. One should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interest of one's own personal gain and fame. Impertinence on the part of the pseudo-spiritual master is very risky to progressive spiritual realization. So, do you have a point, Bali Pru? Okay.
Hare Krishna. So, when Sukadev Goswami spoke the Bhagavatam to Parikshit Maharaj in a big assembly, it could be considered as Maryada Vyatikrama if the case for Uddhava is advising interactions with Vidura. Similarly, there are many instances like Lord Kapila also gave advice or instructions to his own mother, Devahuti. So Lord didn't think that it is a maryada atikrama. He could have asked, you can go to Kardamuni, my father, get enlightenment from him. So there are many instances, you know, I can quote different. Same Uddhava also went to Vrindavan to even educate the gopis or learn from them. So at least these two instances, which is Sukadeva Goswami, how he spoke to the assembly where there are elevated personality, even including his father, and Narad Muni was present, and also Kapil Dev spoke to his mother, Devahuti, and it was not considered a maryada atikrama. However, in this particular situation, it is. So would you please give some explanation?
Well, I did mention that there are two aspects being considered here. Therefore, I said that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had asked Mukunda, are you the father or is Raghunandana the father? And Mukunda said, no, Raghunandana is my father. Considering his spiritual enthusiasm had awakened everybody else to Krishna consciousness. So that's taken into consideration. And therefore, it's not a hard and fast rule, but it's a consideration in all circumstances. In fact, once in New York, Prabhupada had a visitor from India who was a sannyasi, but he was a Mayavadi. And Prabhupada seated him properly and treated him with all respect. And afterwards, some of the devotees asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, you're talking all the time about kicking on the face of Mayavadis, and you treated him with such respect. And Prabhupada said, he's a sannyasi. And at the same time, of course, one would consider that he's a Mayavadi sannyasi, but this environment still is important to consider various aspects of the spiritual acumen and also the person's social position, because it creates an environment in which mercy can flow down, the instruction can flow down. Because it comes from above and it comes down to us. And therefore, the devotees always keep themselves in a position of das, 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 and adasaha. So one has to assess each situation correctly. This is a particular instance showing how there's an etiquette that relates to age. But the spiritual acumen of the speaker supersedes that, obviously, because we have the case, and I did cite that earlier, of Shukadev Goswami, who is described as self-effulgent. And this is one of the prerequisites for being a spiritual teacher, is that one must be self-effulgent. In other words, Shabde Paricha Nishnatam Brahman Yupasham Ashrayam, one must have heard sufficiently and be transcendental oneself before speaking about Krishna consciousness. And this is the main qualification. Kiba Bipra Kibanyasi Shudra Kaninoi Ye Krishna Tattva Vetase Guru Hoy. Whatever background one's from doesn't matter. But if one knows the science of Krishna perfectly, then that person can be accepted as a teacher for Krishna consciousness. Harivamsa, and then Dayanidhi.
Thank you, Prabhu, for bringing out this nice point of etiquettes. I was just remembering how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in different situations, he dealt in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. He first listened, and then when he was prompted, he then he just blasted the whole philosophy, Prakashananda Saraswati also. And then with Digvijay Pandit, he blasted. And then he said, I hope it's okay. And he then humbled him later on so that the effect of the blasting mellows and he understands. So different situations, he's behaving so meticulously.
Yes, I like that you brought up Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was the elder and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu submissively took that role. I'm a 24-year-old sannyasi, you're my teacher. Even when the other devotees said, what are you trying to teach me? He said, what are you talking about? He's my senior, he should teach me. But then later on it became abundantly apparent. Even when when Mahaprabhu manifested his eight-arm form to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, he said, "Do you still think I'm not qualified to take sannyas?" That's mentioned in the Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat. Dayaneidhi Prabhu.
Hare Krishna. First of all, I want to say that now I know the flavor, the taste of the nectar that I'm receiving every time I hear your class. It's rose apple. I always wanted to know. Also, your enthusiasm about the Bhagavatam, third canto, makes me want to read more deeply. My question is you were saying in the beginning that to teach Krishna consciousness to the devotees is the highest thing. And so is it possible to teach Krishna consciousness? Because we hear the word acharya. Acharya means the one who instructs by example. So someone can be, preaching and because they've read the books, or maybe in the past they followed strictly, but then you may observe that they're not exactly being the acharya anymore, but they're still preaching. And, does their preaching have the same effect? Well, actually, I already know the answer. It doesn't. But but the question what is my question? I already know the answer. But you can elaborate on that.
It's a good point, because integrity is of utmost importance in anything. If one is personally following Krishna consciousness, even behind closed doors, then you develop what I like to call spiritual self-esteem. And it's supported by Krishna, who's right there with you, who says, "I know you're following," and therefore he gives you the wherewithal to express it. And it does have a different vibration because of one's integrity. If you don't have integrity in following the process, you may articulate the process, but it won't have the same effect. In fact, some people who are inarticulate but who follow the process have more effect in their very simple speech. You can just observe somebody, and even if they say some simple things. In fact, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur once, when approached by a scholarly person in his ashram who said that, "I want to learn." He had met some of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta's disciples who were very learned and advanced. He said, "I want to become like them. Show me how, please." And so Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, "You go take instruction from Gopal." And so, "Well, Gopal?" He said, "You find him, he's in the ashram." He went looking, "Where's Gopal? Where's Gopal? Where's Gopal?" He ended up going outside, down the into the garden, and there was Gopal picking up some leaves and putting them in the basket. And he said, "Have you seen Gopal?" He said, "I'm Gopal." The man went back to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta and said, "I understand what you're trying to tell me. Now I understand. Now could you please put me with a proper teacher to become like these other students?" Srila Bhaktisiddhanta said, "Did you inquire from Gopal? Go back and talk to him." And so the man went back and he found this simple person who was a gardener who used to listen to all the Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's classes with such great faith and attention that he imbibed the essence of Krishna consciousness, and therefore this man became humbled and was able to understand that this person who's following carefully, although he's very simple, he's not a great scholar, he doesn't know Sanskrit, he knows, yasya devi para bhaktir yata devi tata guru tasyaite katita hyarta prakashanti mahatmanaha. To those who have implicit faith in the spiritual master and in Krishna, then all the imports of Vedic knowledge are automatically and simultaneously revealed. So one can see in one's own life that it makes a difference. And always good to be hard on oneself and liberal on others. That's always a good policy. By the way, I mentioned how Vidura had cried when he heard from Uddhava that Krishna remembered him at the time of leaving the world. And one of my godbrothers, who was with Prabhupada when he, in his final days, was telling us how Prabhupada remembered Jayananda. Even Prabhupada was emaciated, and he was lying on his bed, and he began remembering Jayananda because of there was a quality of his service that was so pure and sincere that Prabhupada noted him. He meant, and this is the goal of one's teaching Krishna consciousness to others and practicing Krishna consciousness, to be remembered by a significant devotee or by Krishna himself. If somehow or other you can be the object of affection of a devotee, a significant devotee, or of Krishna himself, then what more can you ask for in your life? And therefore we work for that. We work for that. And as I mentioned, preaching Krishna consciousness is a very quick way to do that. Prabhupada said, a farm boy in the middle of America who would never be noticed except for maybe amongst a few people in a small town, joins the military, goes to the front lines. He performs a heroic act. Then he comes home as a national hero, and he's treated to a ticker tape parade, and he's mentioned in all the newspapers. So Prabhupada compared that to the boys and girls of America at that time who were going out, and some of them were being beaten, arrested, and so forth, but they were going ahead and preaching Krishna consciousness, and Prabhupada said, you're like that. You're becoming immediately noticed. He said, that's the quick way. So the context of this class, which is about the teaching or preaching methods or strategies, which sounds a little clinical, but in the third canto, this is the overarching idea that by preaching Krishna consciousness, one becomes noticed very quickly by Krishna. Okay, so the first point was about the etiquette. And there is a system called parampara through which mercy flows down and one has to be submissive. And this is shown in the relationship between Vidura and Uddhava to Maitreya and the three of them together. Also, it's mentioned that Vidura is a pure devotee in his own right. Maitreya is mentioned as a mixed devotee. Nonetheless, Prabhupada says, because the science of Krishna consciousness is so subtle, even a great devotee like Vidura had to approach Maitreya and accept a spiritual master in order to understand the science. That shows that the principle of approaching a spiritual master is very important, and how the teaching of Krishna consciousness is disseminated in that environment particularly. Yes, Dainiti Prabhu.
I just was looking up here at the purport, and I was thinking about Bali Amardhan's question about Maryada Vyatikrama. And it says here that one should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interest of one's own personal gain and fame. So I was just thinking, it's not that you're not supposed to be learned, but not try to be showing, you know, overcoming for, you know, to become famous, to become for one's own personal gain.
Good point. And this sort of goes to this point in the Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, fourth chapter, second verse. Sri Vyasadeva said, on hearing Suta Goswami speak thus, Shaunaka Muni, who was the elderly, learned leader of all the rishis engaged in that prolonged sacrificial ceremony, congratulated Suta Goswami by addressing him as follows. Purport. In a meeting of learned men, when there are congratulations or addresses for the speaker, the qualifications of the congratulator should be as follows. He must be the leader of the house and an elderly man. You see, even in the person who's introducing the speaker, there's an etiquette. The person should be the senior person there introducing the honored speaker. He must be vastly learned also. Sri Shaunaka Rishi had all these qualifications, and thus he stood up to congratulate Sri Suta Goswami when he expressed his desire to present Srimad Bhagavatam exactly as he heard it from Shukadeva Goswami and also realized it personally. Personal realization does not mean that one should, out of vanity, attempt to show one's own learning by trying to surpass the previous acharya. He must have full confidence in the previous acharya, and at the same time he must realize the subject matter so nicely that he can present the matter for the particular circumstances in a suitable manner. The original purpose of the text must be maintained. No obscure meaning should be screwed out of it, yet it should be presented in an interesting manner for the understanding of the audience. This is called realization. The leader of the assembly, Shonaka, could estimate the value of the speaker, Sri Suta Goswami, simply by his uttering yathādhītam and yathāmati, and therefore he was very glad to congratulate him in ecstasy. No learned man should be willing to hear a person who does not represent the original acharya. So the speaker and the audience were bona fide in this meeting where Bhagavatam was being recited for the second time. This should be the standard of recitation of the Bhagavatam so that its real purpose can be served and Lord Krishna can be realized without difficulty. Unless this situation is created, Bhagavatam recitation will be for ulterior purposes, and such recitation is useless labor for both the speaker and for the audience. What is the main principle behind that? In the context of the point I'm bringing out. Main principle, though. Okay. Yeah, that there has to be an atmosphere of respect, and in that, then there's a transmission of the real spiritual sound. And without that, if the speaker is motivated, then the vibration is considered to be contaminated. As Sanatana Goswami says, just as milk touched by the lips of a serpent becomes contaminated, so similarly, one who has materialistic purposes when speaking the Bhagavatam also profanes the sound vibration. On the other hand, Prithu Maharaj says that a pure devotee, when he or she speaks, touches the lotus feet of Krishna with the sound vibration of his or her voice, and that becomes mixed with saffron mercy particles, and therefore it has a different quality. So it is a spiritual process, and preaching Krishna consciousness is not simply academic, but it has to do with the practice and the sincerity of the speaker and also the hearer. Both things are important. What is the verse I missed? I was going to recite the Sanskrit. Milk touched by the lips of a serpent. Avaishnavam matongiram putam harikatamritam. Shravanam naiva kartavyam sharpochishtam yatapayaha. Just like milk touched by the sarpa. You don't want to drink that. Okay, so another point. Is that preaching requires sympathy. It requires sympathy. First of all, before I go to the third canto of the Bhagavatam, I want to bring out a verse from the Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna talks about the importance of sympathy in preaching. Radhakri Prabhu, do you have a point? Yes.
Maharaj, I have a question. Specific to Bidura, I mean, he's a pure devotee, and Krishna visited his home. He has personally served him. I was wondering what was he missing, right? I mean, just from my limited knowledge.
Missing Krishna. Both Buddhava and Vidura are described here as practically fainting out of separation. When Vidura first approaches Uddhava and they begin to talk about Krishna and how he's left the world, both of them can barely contain themselves. So Prabhupada explains there that the devotees who feel separation from Krishna can only be appeased by coming together and speaking about him. So this is why he's doing this. And there's another reason, because he's instructing the world. And this comes up when Vidura begins to ask questions of Maitreya. And he could have asked so many things that he really wanted to hear about Krishna's pastimes and so forth. But he asked out of strictness, quote-unquote, what about the material nature? How's it working? And so forth. So this is one of the incentives of pure devotees, not only to be connected to Krishna, and they're connected at every level, even hearing about the Lord's material creation. They feel satisfaction. But they're also doing it so that the message can be articulated for the world, so people can see the progression. Nana Shastra Vicharanaika Nipanosha Dharma Samstapako. The Goswamis painstakingly assembled the verses in ways that we could understand. Oh, here's the process, step by step. So this sympathy is very important, and it's important because this teaching of Krishna consciousness, preaching Krishna consciousness, which I'm using synonymously, is not rote. It comes from an actual appreciation in the heart of the teacher that people are suffering and that without getting Krishna consciousness, they will have no relief. And devotees are paradukaduki. They suffer because of the suffering of others, and I'll prove it. Here's from the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says in 6:32, Atma pamyena sarvatra samam pashyati arjuna sukham va yadi va dukham sa yogi paramo mataha. Krishna says, he is a perfect yogi who by comparison to his own self sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Prabhupada's purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God, and the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all the lands and planets, and the sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold material miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. Due to what? And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world. And he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. He is what? Going back to the other point, nacha tasman manusheshu kashchan me priyakritamaha. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. And so I want to turn to... Not only do I want to, I'm going to turn to a section in the Bhagavatam, 3.2.7. Let's look at 3.2.7. In which it is said, Sri Uddhava said, my dear Vidura, the son of the world, Lord Krishna, has set, and our house has now been swallowed by the great snake of time. What can I say to you about our welfare? And I'll read the first paragraph in the purport. The disappearance of Krishna, of the Krishna son, may be explained as follows. According to the commentary of Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Vidura was struck with great sorrow when he got the hint of the annihilation of the great Yadu dynasty as well as his own family, the Kuru dynasty. Uddhava could understand the grief of Vidura, and therefore he first of all wanted to sympathize with him by saying that after the sunset, everyone is in darkness. Since the entire world was merged in the darkness of grief, neither Vidura nor Uddhava nor anyone else could be happy. Uddhava was as much aggrieved as Vidura, and there was nothing further to be said about their welfare. Please look up the word sympathize. So the first point I made was about etiquette. And there's the Vyavaharika and there's Paramarthika considerations. That is the social stature of a person. And then there's also the spiritual stature of the person who's teaching or learning Krishna consciousness. And in an environment where these are meticulously considered and there is an atmosphere of respect, the knowledge of Krishna consciousness flows freely down from superiors to inferiors. And if you take that away, you strip away from the transcendental process the most essential ingredient of gravity. I mean gravity in which something comes from a higher level to a lower level naturally. And you also stifle the process of natural transmission of spiritual sound, because without Krishna's mercy, it's not possible. And Krishna is pleased when he sees the respectful dealings between devotees. And the second point that I'm taking from the Srimad Bhagavatam regarding teaching Krishna consciousness is there the true teacher of Krishna consciousness must actually develop sympathy within his or her heart for the condition of others. And that requires experience. Vidyam cha vidyam cha yas tadvedo bayam saha avidyayam ratum tirdva vidyayam ratum ashnute. Only one who can learn the process of nescience and that of transcendental knowledge side by side can transcend the influence of repeated birth and death and enjoy the full blessings of immortality. It means one who is mature and experienced in processing whatever anomalies occur in his or her life through the transcendental science, and thus coming to a stable position in life, can then transmit Krishna consciousness to others properly. And this also means there's an awakening of empathy, sympathy within the heart. What does sympathy mean, by the way? Because we heard here in the teaching that Uddhava was giving to Vidura, there was an element of sympathy.
There are quite a few definitions, Maharaj.
Just give the most important one, according to your estimation.
The feeling that you care about and are sorry about someone else's trouble.
Could you read that again?
The feeling that you care about and are sorry about someone else's trouble.
Could you read that again?
The feeling that you care about and are sorry about.
Yeah, you know, Kanka is a nurse, and she knows that healing takes place. Well, I don't want to put words in her mouth. It sounds like the... Anyway, the bedside manner, how the nurse cares. I mean, what is a nurse? It's somebody. It's not just someone who comes in and changes the tubes, but somebody really cares about you, isn't it?
Yes, thank you for this wonderful class. It's very important to have a really loving and caring and empathetic attitude when you're in the nursing field, because these people are sick and they need help in many ways, not just, like you said, changing the tubes. They need kindness and care and love.
And thank you very much. It's essential also in teaching or preaching Krishna consciousness, as we see here. There's a sense of seeing what's troubling the other person and really caring that I want to help this person. So this comes out in the conversations between Vidura and Uddhava, especially. It's mentioned here, this sympathy that Uddhava feels, because he has his own experience. He knows how much Vidura is suffering in separation from Krishna. And of course, those who are Krishna conscious on any level understand, as Prabhupada mentioned in his purport to the Bhagavad Gita verse, that everyone's suffering because of separation from Krishna. The only thing that will make them happy is reconnecting. And oftentimes when a nurse is administering this care, the patient is not exactly appreciative or cooperative. Is that true?
Yes.
Can you give an instant when you try to administer care and somebody was belligerent?
Yes. When I was in my clinicals, I was trying to lovingly give a bath to one of the elderly, and she punched me as hard as she could in the face.
And how did that make you feel?
Like I better get better at ducking.
So preaching means you have to learn how to duck. You have to be adroit. And preaching Krishna consciousness, like there are many professions where sympathy is important. Doctors, nurses know that you have to go and consider the fact that people are in pain, and when they're in pain, they may not be in their right mind. Satyadeva Prabhu told me so many times when people were in diabetic coma, when he would revive them and they were just coming out of it, they were disoriented. Sometimes they would fight him and they would curse him and everything like that. And there he was trying to help him. So preachers have to have this sympathy in their hearts for the people that they're talking to, and have an understanding that even if they swing at me, that I'm taking it as coming from their own ignorance. Even Haridas Thakur, when he was being beaten by the Muslims, was praying for them that, please, Krishna, don't take this personally. Please forgive them. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he was being asked by his pure devotee, was actually taking the hits on his own back. He had made that arrangement. Later on, he showed Haridas Thakur, you see these whip marks on my back? I took those on your behalf because you were praying for these people. You had a point, Manjula Kanda.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. I was wondering, we need to have sympathy when we distribute. How do we develop that sympathy? It's easy to sympathize on myself. It's very difficult to look at somebody who says, go away and I don't want to have anything to do with you. Or even people on the street, you know. I think that's what's missing when the sympathy is missing in the motivation of fresh devotees to book distribution. Even for those who've lost the taste, why should I waste my time on these people? They don't seem to care. So teach us how to sympathize.
Well, when you say these people, it's not a monolith, because anyone who goes out to teach Krishna consciousness, especially in the context you're talking about, distributing books, will see that everyone's an individual. How individual are they? I was just reading in the 10th canto the other day that Krishna's qualities cannot be counted. They're unlimited. And one of the reasons they're unlimited is because there are unlimited living entities. And Krishna has a unique relationship with every single one of them. It means he displays a unique quality. Every living entity sees a uniqueness in Krishna that other ones may not see. That's how unique they are. And for those who go to teach Krishna consciousness to the world, as is being advocated here again and again, that person will begin to see that every living entity is unique. There's no us and them. There's every particle in the universe, every living entity is unique. And they have their unique relationship with Krishna. As to how to develop that sympathy, it's quite mystical, actually. As my Madanga teacher was telling me recently, when I was asking, well, how long does it take to get this particular thing? Because he gave me some finger practice. It was very difficult. And he said, it's really mystical. You just keep trying, and all of a sudden, one day, it just descends, and you're able to do it. He said, it's actually by grace. It's not by practice. And in a similar way, those who try to chant with attention and love, when they chant their japa, just try to chant good japa. And these natural qualities of sympathy will come into one's heart. And it's amazing, because you could chant 16 rounds and say, I didn't feel anything, and then get up to go put a load of laundry in, and all of a sudden the whole world looks different. because of the descent of the holy name, and you start, because knowledge and detachment are concomitant factors, and the topmost way of serving Krishna is by repeating his names with love and attention, and then naturally sympathy comes within one's heart. I should prove it. Yes, yes, di bhaktir bhagavatiya kinchana sarvar gunastatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahatguna manorati nasati davatobihi vasudevi bhagavati bhakti yoga priyojita janayat yashu vairagyam jnanam chayara haitukam shamalangi.
Because, like, you're talking of sympathy, so I can just recall one instance. So I work in Oakland, so near Lake Merritt. So we were with my colleagues one day in the afternoon. I was just taking a walk around Lake Merritt, like not the whole distance, but a little bit of it. So there are a lot of homeless people there around. So one lady, I didn't even see her earlier, but she was walking towards us, and I was walking the other direction, opposite. So I thought that she needed more space, so I just walked a little more side, and my colleagues were there, two other ladies. And she was using some foul language. I didn't know that it was towards me or us. And then I was in the corner. She came and, like, pushed me towards the other side, and the lake was right next, but nothing happened. And I could just keep calm, and my colleagues, they were very angry. They wanted to, like, go back and, you know, hit her or do something. But maybe even I just told them, you know, she's out of her mind. She's not stable, so we cannot just judge her by what she did. But now I'm thinking, you know, maybe unknowingly all these qualities, they come that, you know, you do not react. And they were, like, very angry. Till today they say, you know, we won't walk there. If we get her, we are going to get back to her. But it just happened. I mean, like, I just recall that instance.
Yeah, naturally you have that context. I have a godbrother, Jagadish Prabhu, at the temple in Toronto, which is on Avenue Road, is a miraculous temple. It's a beautiful old stone temple, built hundreds of years ago. And the neighborhood is perhaps one of the most wealthy neighborhoods in all of Canada, maybe in all of North America. When you take a Joppa walk down, you just see one mansion after another. They're not houses, they're mansions. And one of the devotees told me that Jagadish Ananda, after they got that temple, he felt such sympathy for the rich people. He used to go door to door. Some people say, oh, I feel sorry for the poor people. He was feeling sympathy for the rich people because he thought, there they are in these multi-million, $20 million homes, and they think that they're happy, but actually they're suffering more, perhaps, than anyone, because they have this false sense of happiness in the material world, which is, I say, perhaps more than anyone, because of my experience over the last couple of weeks. Dave Amrita Swami was talking about happiness from his book, Hiding in a Natural Happiness, and he was giving abundant evidence that people who become highly successful materially actually suffer more. Because once they get to the top and they say, hey, there's nothing in this, then they have to take to intoxication because you have to numb the pain. And Radhanath Swami talked about it as well. So sympathy is not, you know, it's something that comes naturally to one who's getting a higher taste in Krishna consciousness as well. I've had this experience of being, for instance, in Los Angeles for the Rath Yatra preparation, and doing seva alongside the devotees and then going to the morning program in New Dwarka, you can forget that there's an outside world. It's possible. You could be there for 3-4 days just in the association of devotees, and then when you drive one block away and you look out and you see, oh my God, people are still doing these crazy things. And there's a possibility that one could suddenly feel like, wow, I feel sorry for them. They're living in a desert. And there's water over there. And it comes naturally by appreciating in a natural way by the association of devotees how sublime it is to have relationships with soft-hearted devotees and to have the permission just to hear and chant with no other obligation to the drudgery of the material world. Yes.
I was thinking about the Sankirtan.
Drudgery, not drudgery, sorry.
I was thinking about the Sankirtan when they're angry, or they turn you away, or they mistreat you. Like for me, I remember always thinking, wow, they must be suffering so much to behave like that, you know, to be so rude and crude. And you know, to just say a prayer for them, to hopefully that somehow or other they'll be able to get some kind of mercy.
Yeah, this is real happiness, to be free from envy. Envy is what ruins everything here in this world. If one doesn't have envy in one's heart, you're going to say another thing?
I just remembered also that one time I was listening to you and you were saying how, yeah, some of the people are like the green mangoes and some of the people are like the ripe mangoes. So we also have to develop a detachment so that when they are rude or crude or they're not ready, that to know that someday, hopefully, they will be ready.
Yes, actually, in training some young people over the summer, I had the great opportunity of going to New York and working with a busload of young people. And then we had also, just recently here, the same bus came, different young people, but there were a lot of young kids. And like anybody who's starting book distribution for the first time, there are concerns about rejection. I find this is the number one point that people say is, I'm afraid of rejection. And I was thinking about it the other day, and how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, this is the best thing that can happen to you, is somebody rejects you. He said that when you get rejected, it develops your spiritual blood in your spiritual body. You have a spiritual body and it needs spiritual blood. Here we have regular blood, water and some, you know, colored red dye. I think that's it. I think I skipped my biology 101. But there's a spiritual body, a chidsharira, he says, that needs chidrakta. It needs spiritual blood. He said the best thing that can happen to you is you go out to teach Krishna consciousness and somebody rejects you. It's the best thing that can... It develops your spiritual character. And if you avoid that your whole life, you become anemic. You become so dependent on people, you could become dependent on everyone boosting your ego. It's like, oh yeah, it's really good. Great class, you know. It's like, okay, now I feel great. But if you go outside, it's like, get out of here. Like the other day, we were coming back and we saw some people in their house having a party. So we were waving to them to see if the radar worked. And one of them came to the door to see what we wanted. And he opens the door to the apartment and he goes, oh, Bhagavad Gita, I know where this is going. And then he just closed the door and went back in. And it made me think, you know, how did he know Bhagavad Gita? And what is it in that particular living entity who's out of hand rejecting Bhagavad Gita? And it made a whole, it gave me a whole thought process to consider why some people reject it, why some people take it. It seems personally perfectly reasonable to me, every verse in the Bhagavad Gita. Why does somebody else reject it? And just in that one instant, it gave me a whole new consideration. And this is chid rakta, for the chid sharira. You should get rejected. And one gets realizations when there are reversals in life. In fact, when there's a disaster, an all-out disaster in life, it's proven scientifically that people actually become more peaceful. Why? Because there's nothing more you can do. It's just... All the time I'm walking around with the burden of the world, like my bank account, my house, my this, my, and it, if it all just goes away, all of a sudden you go like, hey, I don't have that anymore. I heard that from, there was a famous movie star. His name was, he used to be married to Madonna years ago. Sean Penn. His house was in Malibu. There was a big Malibu fire, just like there is now. Maybe not in Malibu, but in Southern California. And his house burned down. So I heard an interview with him, and he said, so the interviewer said, so, you know, your whole house burned down. How do you feel? And he said, well, you know, in your office right now where you have a drawer full of letters you're supposed to answer and bills you're supposed to pay and all kinds of things, you don't know where to put them and things like that? And she goes, yeah. And he goes, I don't have that anymore. And when one also teaches Krishna consciousness and gets rejected and then learns how to recover from that by reading the Bhagavad Gita, taking solace from other devotees, then one becomes strong, otherwise not. And therefore, you have to get this. You have to be bold and go out and teach Krishna consciousness with sympathy in a bedside manner and learn to take this kind of response from people and then process it over time. Dainidi Prabhu, somebody run him a microphone really fast. Okay, now we have a text right
I was at Whole Foods the other day with Bhagavat Maharaj. And we were walking back to the car, and this guy started backing up, and he clearly saw us, and he tried to practically run us over. And I was like, "Hey, hey!" And he goes, "Get out of the way, you damn Buddhists!"
Yeah, that definitely gives one cause. Okay, or pause.
This is from Vaikunth Naik Prabhu in India.
Especially, it's funny because you're not Buddhist, too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's so misplaced, and that helps to understand how, you know, people's reactions like that. And according to the verse, Atmao Pam Yena Sarvata, you might see it in yourself, too. Have I ever done that? Have I ever, you know, said that to someone? Or, you know, I don't know the people driving on the freeway very well, but have I ever, you know, become angry at them? And said, you know, you idiot. And then I see, oh, it's actually a Nobel laureate or something like that. I mean, what do I know? This kind of reaction just comes out. And one who's actually learning to control the senses then feels compassion rather than a reaction coming out, right? It's just misplaced. Yeah.
So, Maharaj, this is from Vaikunth Naik Prabhu.
Vaikunth Naik? Whoa.
And this is Dhanvat's All Glory to Srila Prabhupada. This is related to the point that was discussed regarding whether the teacher who is not sincere can bring about a change to the people to whom he preaches. And then he's going to tell us a story. I'm not sure if Srila Prabhupada mentioned the story or if this is bona fide. And you can tell him that. But it goes something like this. A milkmaid needs to cross a river to deliver milk to a pandit. One day, when the boat is not there, she gets delayed. So the pandit chastises her by saying that by chanting the name of the Lord, people cross the ocean of material existence, and she couldn't even cross a river. The milkmaid, with full faith, chants and is able to cross the river. The pandit tries and he drowns. So in this example here, even though the speaker is not pure, because he mentioned something as per Shastra, his words seem to have an effect. Looks like in this case, the Vani was more important than the person speaking it. Seems to be contradictory to the milk touched by serpent example.
So well, I mean, there are Vartmana Pradakshaka gurus who may be even, as in the case of well, Dhruva, but his mother was pretty exalted. I was thinking of, as is mentioned in the first, in the Adi Leela, Volume 1, that Prabodhananda Saraswati, no, Bilvamanga Thakur's guru, Chintamani, his Varmana Pratyakshaka guru, was his girlfriend, and he was going and spending time with her. Sneaking out, climbing walls, you know, and there was a huge storm, and he took so much trouble, and she said, you know, God, if you took so much trouble for just spiritual life, you'd be really advanced. I mean, what am I? I'm just a, you know, material body. And then he sobered up suddenly and became sincere about Krishna consciousness. And then he credits her for starting her on the path. So Krishna can act through different people, but talking about being in a sustained teaching situation, it's important, the integrity of the teacher over time. It's important. And this comes out in the various verses we cited before, and especially if one has an ill motive. If one's simply innocent and repeats the Shastra, that's one thing. But if somebody's got a malinterpretation, Mayavad, for instance, even if one chants the holy name with this idea that I'm God, and then one hears it, Haridas Thakur said, that's not very good. You're actually taking in a different kind of sound vibration. So that verse doesn't prove that motive isn't important, but it may show that people can act as instruments to pass on certain fragments of the spiritual teachings from the Shastra. So, sympathy is important. And I want to bring out another verse, 3.125, in which I found very profound in the relationship between Vidura and Uddhava. I found an element I think is important. And here, then, due to his great love and feeling, Vidura embraced him, Uddhava, who was a constant companion of Lord Krishna and formerly a great student of Brihaspati's. Vidura then asked him for news of the family of Lord Krishna, the personality of Godhead. This is when they're meeting. So Vidura asked him for news of the family of Krishna. Vidura was older than Uddhava, like a father, and therefore when the two met, Uddhava bowed down before Vidura, and Vidura embraced him because Uddhava was younger, like a son. And we see again here the relationships. Vidura's brother Pandu was Lord Krishna's uncle, and Uddhava was a cousin to Lord Krishna. According to social custom, therefore, Vidura was to be respected by Uddhava on the level of his father. Uddhava was a great scholar in logic, and he was known to be the son or disciple of Brihaspati, the greatly learned priest and spiritual master of the demigods. Vidura asked Uddhava about the welfare of his relatives, although he already knew that they were no longer in the world. This inquiry appears to be very queer, but Sri Jiva Goswami states that the news was shocking to Vidura, who therefore inquired again due to great curiosity. Thus his inquiry was psychological and not practical. It was psychological and not practical. I found that to be important because in the teachings of in preaching Krishna consciousness, there's a psychological element as well. It's not just practical. It's not teaching people ABCs, but it's understanding what their psychological needs may be as well. And here, Vidura, out of shock and a psychological need to discuss this, feigned ignorance and said, how are they? He knew they were already gone. And so in the Upadeshamrita, Prabhupada writes, contributing or distributing the holy name of the Lord is a sublime example of contributing or giving charity, the Dadati principle. What's a sublime example of contributing or giving charity? Contributing or distributing the holy name of the Lord is a sublime example of contributing or giving charity. Isn't that nice charity to give? It's the Dadati principle. By the same token, one must also follow the Pratyagrihanati principle and be willing and ready to receive the transcendental gift. One should inquire about the Krishna consciousness movement and open his mind in order to understand the situation of this material world. Thus the Kuyam Akhyati Prachyati principle can be served. And just a very touching in this relationship between Vidura and Uddhava is this exchange in which there's a consideration of the psychological need to discuss these topics. So teaching Krishna consciousness includes this Guhyam Akhyati Prichyati amongst the devotees of considering the particular needs of the devotees and teaching accordingly. And also, Pratyagrihanati, accepting, hearing from others carefully, so that one can heal oneself. One has to take help from devotees, from advanced devotees, and hear the solutions, spiritual solutions to the different problems that we experience in everyday life. And this is one of the main ways that advanced devotees sustain themselves, is they keep in touch with advanced devotees, and they establish this principle of pratigrinati, of exchanging, hearing from others, guyamakyati prichati, speaking and hearing confidential subject matters. And that's what we see here being exchanged between Vidura and Uddhava. Now I'm moving on to one more point. This is a side point, and it's, you'll find it in 3, 4, 10. One of the very hidden, simple statements that's in the third canto of the Bhagavatam. Oh, my book's covered. 3, 4, 10. Here it is. It comes in the word for word in this verse. Anatta kandarasya. See, anatta kandarasya means lowering of the shoulder. Maitreya Muni was greatly attached, and this is the time Maitreya found Krishna and Uddhava in the forest. And Krishna is about to speak, so Maitreya sat down to listen. And this is how he listened. I want you to try this. Anatta kandarasya means he lowered his shoulder to listen. This is the secret that one has to lean in. I saw a book when I was getting in the airplane. I didn't read it. I looked at it in the bookstore, but it seemed not so relevant to me. But it was called Lean In. And I thought, I like that. I like the title's good enough for me. But lean in. That's what Upanishad means also. Lean in. And once I was speaking to an audience, and there were about, and it was very recently, there were a lot of devotees that were very eager to hear. And there was one person who maybe was there for the first time and maybe didn't even know where he or she was, and was texting during the class. And it was very distracting. I noticed it, even though there were like 50 devotees eager to hear, one person who wasn't into it, who was just completely somewhere else, and there was a blockage. I could feel I had to overcome that. And so there's a description of how the audience has to be open, leaning in, and the speaker also has to be qualified and ready and potent. And then there's the transmission in this teaching. And so the translation, Maitreya was greatly attached to him, the Lord, and he was listening in a pleasing attitude with his shoulder lowered, with a smile and a particular glance upon me, having allowed me to rest. The Lord spoke as follows. So the last point preaching in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam is found in 3:21:45. What? Donate? 3:25. 45 through 47. Yeah, because it's a hyphen. Okay, so this section is a description of Kardama Muni and Swami Bhuvamanu, one of my favorite sections in the Bhagavatam. At Kardama Muni, I've been attracted to that idea, although I was unable to do it, to be able to sit in the forest for 10,000 years. I was attracted to that when I was a teenager. I thought, this is what I'd like to do. I let my hair get matted, and I took off my shoes, and I said, no more shoes, and so things like that. And so when I hear this pastime, it's sort of cathartic for me. I can feel vicariously, I experience this Kardharma Muni, 10,000 years of meditation, and in the forest like that. So nice. Anyway, the Lord appears, being pleased with his austerities, and Kardharma Muni offers these beautiful prayers. And then at the end he said, oh, and by the way, sorry to mention this, but I need a wife. And the Lord says, I already know. She'll be here in 3 days. I've made the arrangement. It's profound on many levels. One is just that the Lord is so considerate, and he arranges everything if you fully concentrate on your service. As he says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ananyas Chintayam. Krishna personally carries to people who don't have time to do any other things. He carries what you lack in reserve. If you're so busy doing his service that you don't have time for anything else, he'll make up for it. Just observe it. Find out for yourself. You find somebody who's so busy that they can't do anything but hear and chant, and see if they're lacking anything. You find me one person, I'll be very surprised. You don't find that. You find that people who are fully absorbed in their own bhajan, of course, all living entities are naturally provided for. But this is different. Yoga kshemam bahamyaham. Krishna personally takes care of these people. You think, how is it happening? Read the verse. there it is. So Kardharma Muni is meditating, and the Lord appears, and he says, the daughter of Manu is very. They'll be here in a few days, and you can take this arrangement that I've made. So when Manu, very exalted person in the universe, appears, then Kardharma Muni greets him. I'll just read this series of verses. Entering the most sacred spot with his daughter and going near the sage, the first monarch, Swayambhuva Manu, saw the sage sitting in his hermitage, having just propitiated the sacred fire by pouring oblations into it. His body shone most brilliantly. Though he had engaged in austere penances for a long time, he was not emaciated, for the Lord had cast his affectionate sidelong glance upon him, and he had also heard the nectar flowing from the moon-like words of the Lord. The sage was tall, his eyes were large like the petals of a lotus, and he had matted locks on his head. He was clad in rags. Swayambhuva Manu approached him and saw him to be somewhat soiled like an unpolished gem. Seeing that the monarch, I'm going on, had come to his hermitage and was bowing before him, the sage greeted him with benedictions and received him with due honor. After receiving the sage's attention, the king sat down and was silent. Recalling the instructions of the Lord, Kardharma then spoke to the king as follows, delighting him with his sweet accents. The tour you have undertaken, O Lord, is surely intended to protect the virtuous and kill the demons, since you embody the protecting energy of Sri Hari. Assume, when necessary, the part of the sun god, the moon god, Agni, and the fire, and the god of fire, Indra, the lord of paradise, Vayu, the wind god, Yama, god of punishment, Dharma, the god of piety, and Varuna, the god presiding over all the waters. All obeisances unto you, you are none other than Lord Vishnu. He goes on like this when he greets Manu. And it's mentioned therein that Manu took this praise as instruction. He took it as instruction. So we come to chapter. And Maitreya says, after describing the greatness of the emperor's manifold qualities and activities, the sage became silent, and the emperor, feeling modesty, addressed him as follows. Manu replied, to expand himself in Vedic knowledge, Lord Brahma, the personified Veda, from his face created you, the Brahmanas, who are full of austerity, knowledge, and mystic power, and are averse to sense gratification. And he goes on praising Kardharma Muni. Now I'm going to read you a purport that will astound you and make you feel like it was worth driving all the way over here today. It's text number 5, 322.5. Now I have resolved all my doubts by meeting you, for your lordship has very kindly and clearly explained the duty of a king who desires to protect his subjects. Purport. Manu described herewith the result of seeing a great saintly person. Lord Chaitanya says that one should always try to associate with saintly, because if one establishes a proper association with a saintly person, even for a moment, one attains all perfection. Somehow or other, if one meets a saintly person and achieves his favor, then the entire mission of one's human life is fulfilled. In our personal experience, we have actual proof of this statement of Manu. Once we had the opportunity to meet Vishnupad Sri Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, and on first sight he requested this humble self to preach his message in the Western countries. There was no preparation for this, but somehow or other he desired it, and by his grace we are now engaged in executing his order, which has given us a transcendental occupation and has saved and liberated us from the occupation of material activities. Thus it is actually a fact that if one meets a saintly person completely engaged in transcendental duties and achieves his favor, then one's life mission becomes complete. What is not possible to achieve in thousands of lives can be achieved in one moment if there is an opportunity to meet a saintly person. It is therefore enjoined in Vedic literature that one should always try to associate with saintly persons and try to disassociate oneself from the common man, because by one word of a saintly person, one can be liberated from material entanglement. A saintly person has the power, because of his spiritual advancement, to give immediate liberation to the conditioned soul. Here Manu admits that all his doubts are now over because Kardama has kindly described the different individual souls. That goes back to one of the points I made earlier, just about the importance of association with those who have no motive within their hearts and so forth. But there's another point I want to bring out that's more practical about preaching Krishna consciousness, and that comes out in this exchange between Manu and Kardama. And that is that when they greet each other, they take time to appreciate one another deeply. Their achievements, their position in life, and so forth. And because of that, there's an opening of the heart and a willingness to hear what the other one has to say. Now, this comes out in a practical way in something that Prabhupada told us about preaching Krishna consciousness in general. And that is, a point made by Prabodhananda Saraswati. And I'll read a conversation or a lecture, Prabhupada, a section, excerpt. What is the constitutional position? The constitutional position is to serve, just like parcel of my body, this finger is to serve the body. This is constitutional position. If the finger denies, no, I am God, why shall I serve you? This is anyata rupam. So mukti means to give up anyata rupam, and that is the demand of Krishna. Sarva dharman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. Somebody please make it 1 degree or 2 degrees warmer in here. I think it's too cold. You have manufactured so many rascaldom in the name of religion. Give up all this nonsense. Give up what?
Nonsense.
All this nonsense. Simply surrender unto me. This is wanted. This is what?
Wanted.
Absolutely. But Krishna knows that if I say to the rascals, surrender unto me, he'll take it otherwise. A big scholar says, oh, this is too much. Sophistry. Krishna is demanding, simply surrender unto me, and the commentator is remarking, oh, this is too much. And actually, we are feeling, why shall I surrender to Krishna? We have got so many other. We have got another Krishna, another this, another this. Why alone to Krishna? Because he cannot understand. Because he has not undergone penance and austerities and has not become a devotee, how can he understand Krishna? Therefore, he is warning, don't talk this thing, this surrender unto me or surrender to Krishna, to the rascals and nonsense. They'll not accept it. Therefore, he is warned. But if you say, why are you preaching? We are taking the risk. We know that ordinary person, they'll not understand, but it has become our duty because we are servant of Krishna. The servant of Krishna, we are going from country to country, from door to door, and flattering them, falling down at their lotus feet. Just like Prabhupada Saraswati said, Dante nidhaya trinakam padayora nipatya. He was a great devotee of Lord Chaitanya. Chaitanya and Krishna the same. So he says, I have taken a grass in my mouth. This is Indian system, you know. To accept a grass, that means becoming very Dante nidaya trinakam padayora nipatya. And falling down at your feet. Kakushatam kritvachaham bhavimi. I am flattering you 100 times. I am just appealing to you one thing. What is that? Hey, sattva, you are a very great man. You are a very pious man. But I request you, you give up everything. Whatever nonsense you've learned, please give it up. Then, what I have to do? Chaitanya Chandra Charane Kuruta Anuragam. Just become a devotee of Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya's devotee. What is this business? Amara Agnaya Guru Hanatara Edesh. Just that, on my order, become a guru. And what is the business of the guru? The guru's business is Yare Dhako Tare Kaha Krishna Badesh. You simply spread what Krishna has said or what is said about Krishna Badesh. Upadesh means instruction. The instruction which is given by Krishna or the instruction given about Krishna, that is called Krishna Upadesh, Krishna Kata. So Bhagavad Gita is Krishna Upadesh, directly giving Krishna the instruction. So this is our business. We have become guru, spiritual master, not in the position that I have become God. No, we are servant, simply servant, ordinary servant, just like post peon, not very high salaried servant, ordinary, third class servant. What is our business? To deliver the letter. That's all. Here is your letter, sir. So to become spiritual master is not very difficult. Any ordinary man can become, provided he becomes a pure servant delivering the letter. Here is Krishna's message, sir. You surrender to Krishna. Krishna says, surrender unto me. We spiritual master, we say, surrender to Krishna. What is the difficulty? So, again, a bedside manner. And there's a very specific point here that you have to learn how to, well, find the good qualities in people. We call it here flattering, but actually sincere compliments. And it's not hard if you see how everything's related to Krishna. There's a way in which teaching Krishna consciousness doesn't mean you just come barreling in and tell people that they're nonsense. I mean, you can go into somebody's house, you're invited there to teach Krishna consciousness, you may see a picture on the wall of some other guru who's like, that guy's bogus. You could sit down and just start criticizing. And then everyone close their minds and ears and maybe even not invite you back ever again. Or you can praise them for their spiritual progress and everything like that. And then as their minds and hearts open, you can begin to give them Krishna consciousness. Prabhu, Gaurav.
So actually, you kind of touched upon it when you said we should not start criticizing and close the hearts of people when you're trying to preach. At the same time, you know, my observation or my experience was at least I turned towards the Gaudiya Vaishnava philosophy because of very strong preaching. And actually, extremely strong preaching. So, because I can, and later on I realized what a rascal I was. And so I think that also works sometimes. And I think the Shastric proof is that Siddhanta Bolia Chitya na koreha alas yaha hote Krishna hoi sudhruda manas. So that is also true, I think.
It's the prerogative of the doctor. An expert doctor knows which kind of medicine to give. And sometimes a bitter pill, and other times there has to be some sweet syrup involved. Dhritarashtra was a strong medicine. There was there's a case in Dhritarashtra when Vidura had to say, "Wake up!" Yeah, and you know that was effective at the time, and it had to do a lot with his relationship and the context, and so it's an art. It's just like administering medicine is an art. You have to see, oh, if I give this medicine right now, it might kill the person. If I don't give this medicine right now, they may die. I mean, you have to. It's not rote. It's not something. It's something that you actually have to intuit when you're meeting people and seeing, you know, what can they handle. Harivamsha. Thank you. Nice point.
Thank you, Maharaj. I just want to bring this small anecdote. With His Holiness Badrinayan Swami Maharaj shares that one. A scholar came to Prabhupada, Indian scholar, and Prabhupada told him, is there a difference between a cotton shirt and cotton?
Cotton ball.
Cotton ball. And he said, he wasn't. Then Prabhupada just Anat Kandarasya leaned forward and shook him up and told, are you getting it? Is there a difference between cotton ball and cotton shirt? And probably he get it. But then after he left, Prabhupada said, that's a special prerogative for a young child or an old person. They can say anything. So he was kind of indicating that you don't go to home and do it with your parents or do it with whom you're teaching. So
yeah, and I've seen actually that in some places where the gradual approach is taken, direct being just appreciative, that over time the people actually become devotees. And I've seen just the opposite. Somebody come into somebody's home and immediately start bringing the firing squad, and that devotees are never invited back. People were offended on a certain level. So it takes a little medical training to know when to offer this kind of sweetness in preaching and when to actually become strong. But in my experience, I've yet to find a living entity in this world, besides, you know the difference, like anyone who doesn't like a little bit of praise. In fact, you could just say it outright and they'll like, you're just praising me, right? But I really like you. I mean, it's better to err on that side, in my humble opinion. And if you're really empowered and in the moment and you know when to bring the heat, then try it, see what happens. You were going to make a point, Manjula.
I was just going to add that we consider also that this is the age of Kali. It's the age of quarrel. So even when we're nice and sweet and do everything right, so it's better to lean to that side than to try the strong approach.
Yeah, it has to be appropriate to the time and circumstance, and to understand people's psychology. I mean, Peter Burwash was telling me that he talked to Prabhupada about management. He had a little private session, he asked these things. So one of the things he does in the company, he asks people, how do you like to take your criticism when they join the company? Do you like it directly? Do you like it right away? Do you like it the soft approach? As the Andy Stanley was, he's a famous Christian preacher, that he says that he can give, after his sermon, he says, wait till Wednesday to give me your feedback. Like he tells his family, wife, everyone, like, wait till Wednesday. Because if you tell me on Sunday night after I just gave it, or Monday morning, you're a little bit vulnerable and it's like hard to take criticism. It's hard. But if you're sensitive to people and you give it in a soft way or an appropriate way, then it has more effect. Appropriate is the right word. Yes.
Thank you, Guru Maharaj, for the excellent class. And we are glad that you have not taken that 10,000 years and then compassionately for mercy on all of our ISV devotees and all over the world. Practically all the class was instructive. And then the first point that you mentioned about the etiquette, just because being in ISV, we are so much fortunate that we see that. And just to give an illustration, Once when His Grace Radhika Raman Prabhu came, and you are equally advanced, there is no doubt in that, and you have given him like more respect than anyone else. I can see that how much you had appreciation for what he has developed as a pure devotee, though he is less in age and everything, but you have made him that he is qualified as well. So that is the, like what you mentioned in the Shastra, we see in our own eyes. And
although second, I don't agree with the premise that I'm on an equal level.
Second,
lower level, but go ahead.
Second thing, regarding Sam Langi Mataji's and actually talking, I think Manjukan Mataji about why we get impetus to preach. So one of my senior director, he was leaving the company and then he was giving the talk at final. So he mentioned that he was mentioning about how the mentors are so useful. So he was telling, because gratitude for my mentors, those who have given me this knowledge, I wanted to be connected with you to all to pass down what I have learned. So it's also a gratitude in the heart that because I have got this knowledge, I wanted to give to others the way that I have learned. So I was just remembering that point of why we preach is
out of gratitude.
Because of gratitude, because someone has given us this knowledge, I wanted to pass down. It's not my knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
nice point.
Yeah, I think. Thank you so much.
Yes, Sudeep, and then Dainidhi. Okay, one, two, three, four.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the excellent class. My point was about, I was listening to it while I was driving here, was about the when we receive rejection, when we are going out and distributing books. So in my humble experience, it has been like, especially at India Cash and Carry, where we do, and the response is really not that great. It takes a lot of purification initially, but what happens is, amidst all this, when somebody accepts it, when we meet a sadhu who's accepting it, that experience makes it even more sweeter. In the sense, all that rejection, the more rejection we get, the sweeter it feels when somebody, we meet someone who's very willing, who's very pleasing, and who's so nice, and they share their own realization. So in a way, this whole rejection itself is that you're just getting closer to the goal of meeting and making it even more sweeter.
Now to Indian Cash and Carry with Dainidhi about, what was it, 8 years ago? We were together there at the table, and Ramananda Sakha was his first time out, I think. And there we were at the table, and this man came over to Dainidhi, and he's looking through the books, and he goes, "I'm God." And what did you say, Dainidhi? He said, "You're part of God."
I said, "You're God-like."
"You're God-like." And the guy goes, "No, I'm God." And Dainidhi said, "You're God-like." He said, "I'm God, God-like," about 20 times, back and forth. And the guy put the book down and walked away. And then about 10 minutes later, he came back and with $20 or something, he said, "Here, I'll take the book." And I just saw it as an example of Dainidhi Prabhu completely convinced in what he was saying. And it's well-reasoned, too. I mean, he's read the Shastra, he knows. So he was presenting in a reasonable but forceful way. And just not in a mean way, but just very straightforward. He said, "I'm God." He said, "You're God-like." Back and forth. And finally, the guy came back and took the book. Who's up? Dainidhi, you're up.
Okay. First of all, I want to say that I become a basket case when I get this microphone in my hand. Please forgive me. Last year when my godbrother Bhakti Sridhar Maharaj was at my house, he gave a really nice talk about the different listeners. You're talking about leaning forward, and the old Sanskrit, different Sanskrit words for one who sits up right in front of class, someone who sits a little bit further back, someone who sits further back. There's a different Sanskrit word for each one. It was very engaging. It was really interesting. Anyway, for me, the reason I sit back is because the lights, I have bad eyes, and the bright light sort of affect me, and I can concentrate better sitting back here. I want to say that. Also, this may be too long of a question to answer, but I was thinking more about the, you know, trying to take association of the more advanced Uttama Adhikari, even devotee, and how do you recognize an Uttama Adhikari? Because someone might... There's sadhana, there's two aspects to sadhana. There's vaidhi bhakti and there's raganuga bhakti. So if we see someone that doesn't seem to be exhibiting vaidhi But they're preaching very nicely. How is it? So I'm thinking maybe this person has Raganuga Bhakti, and they're not. But I know that you're supposed to also, Prabhupada never stopped chanting, Prabhupada never stopped being the example. So I think I know the answer, but maybe you can just say something about this Raganuga and Vaidhi Bhakti.
Okay.
If you want, otherwise.
From this Nectar of Instruction, page 50. In this Krishna consciousness movement, a chance is given to everyone without discrimination of caste, creed, or color. Invited to join this movement, sit with us, take prasad, and hear about Krishna. When we see that someone is actually interested in Krishna consciousness and wants to be initiated, we accept him as a disciple for the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. When a neophyte devotee is actually initiated and engaged in devotional service by the orders of the spiritual, he should be accepted immediately as a bona fide Vaishnava, and obeisances should be offered unto him. Out of many such Vaishnavas, one may be found to be very seriously engaged in the service of the Lord, strictly following all the rules and principles, chanting the prescribed number of rounds on japa beads, and always thinking how to expand the Krishna consciousness movement. Such a Vaishnava should be accepted as an Uttama Adhikari, a highly advanced devotee, and his association should always be sought. It's very straightforward, are verifiable. And those things that aren't verifiable are not verifiable. But when you have very explicit verifiable symptoms, you go with those. And those who are on the Raganuga platform are advised and to follow very strictly the rules and regulations of devotional service. The main symptom that you'll find in somebody who's very advanced is, besides the ones mentioned, or it's inclusive in these, is an eagerness to hear, interested in hearing about Krishna. This is the main point made in the Bhagavatam by Lord Kapiladev about a person who is beyond the modes of material nature, performing devotional service that's not affected by the modes of material nature. They're spontaneously attracted to hearing all the time. And if you pull out a Chaitanya Charitamrita, they don't suddenly vacate. Because that happens. It's like you're talking about this and that and politics, whatever, and then, oh, you got to read the Adi Leela. It's like, I got to go. So commonsensical, verifiable ways of understanding who's advanced are there, right there in the scripture. So you take those. At the same time, we give deference to devotees when we're around them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when Ramachandra Puri came and gave all kinds of criticism of him, the devotees would say, why are you tolerating this? He said, he's my godbrother of my spiritual master. He's worshipable by me. And besides, what's the problem? He's giving me good advice. And so there's also this kind of etiquette as well, to not become overly critical of people, to give them the benefit of the doubt. And they're giving an altered philosophy, in which case it's the duty of devotees to notice the difference and to not necessarily tolerate that person's spreading that philosophy if it's different from Shruti Smriti Puranadi Pancharatriki Vidim Vinaya. One has to, for the benefit of others, rectify that philosophical defect.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so today, just to recap, I just took one tiny little drop to try to explain some of the points I've seen in the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam that relate to the to preaching Krishna consciousness. And I mentioned, number one, that etiquette is very important for creating the environment. Tell me what the other ones were. What? To be sympathetic. You actually have to develop sympathy within the heart in order to preach Krishna consciousness. And we see that from Uddhava, see that from Vidura, even Maitreya, the advanced devotees have sympathy, and that impels them to give Krishna consciousness to speak up about it. What's another point? When devotees talk, they take time to recognize each other's good qualities. That's part of it. Don't be fearful of rejection when teaching Krishna consciousness. Yes. An atmosphere of mutual respect. And Tadati Pradhanati, take shelter of its devotees and reveal your mind and heart. And one should appreciate that part of remaining deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness is psychological. We need psychological help by taking advice from advanced and discussing with them even topics that seem to be troublesome. For instance, Vidura was troubled by the disappearance of Krishna and all his family members. Shocking. So he discussed it with a senior devotee who was able to, and then he was able to process it. And Prabhupada mentions that. It's not that devotees aren't overcome by various emotions, but they know how to transcend them by discussing the philosophy of Krishna consciousness with advanced devotees. This is hard. Maybe raise your hand and give a point. Yeah. The microphones all went dead suddenly, right? These are the main points. Go ahead.
I like that point, Maharaj, where you said, if you just hear and chant, Krishna will arrange it. Everything else will be taken care of. And you mentioned that you have yet to see a person who is absorbed in hearing.
Yeah, I kind of said that. The one thing is, Vasudev Datta just heard and chanted and was so absorbed in Krishna consciousness, he didn't care for his finances. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu noticed it, and he sent Sivananda Sain and said, he's only hearing and chanting. Of course, this is an incident of the Lord intervening and helping out, right? But at the same time, there's some indication there that one should do one's due diligence. And what I said was, at a certain point, one may be too busy to even do one's due diligence. Not that you do it artificially. There's a point at which there have been in history of ISKCON, I know for sure, because I've seen it for myself, people who have taken this idea and then prematurely given up their duties and on the pretext of I'm just going to hear and chant all day long, therefore I'm not obligated to anything else, and they failed. So vidyam cha vidyam chayas tadvedo bayam saha, and there are verses in the Bhagavad Gita, one we listed the other night, where Krishna says fight and think of me and so forth. But in a real way, there is a progression in one's Krishna consciousness by which one becomes more and more absorbed in service and in hearing and chanting just by the transcendental arrangement of the Lord and his devotees, so that you really don't have time to do anything else. And in those cases, Krishna takes care of you. He carries what you lack and preserves what you have. Just subtle point I want to make there without making it too one-sided. Yes. Three more and then we're over.
You spoke about the concept of attitude in the very beginning. You said that was what defines a lot of the relationships. You spoke about Guru-Shishya, the relationship of receiving Krishna conscious knowledge. And then you spoke about Sambandha, Abhideya and Prayojana. I'm trying to understand, where did that fall into this? Is it how we preach?
Yeah, it was a side point. I just happened to have noted it, that there's a way in which there's a strategy that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu presented, and so did the Goswamis following his direction. Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana. Dividing up the entire philosophy, like the Vedas and the Vedanta Sutra, may be very difficult to digest right away. But if we learn skillfully how to divide them up into pieces so that people can understand then the preaching can be more effective. So I brought that point out. Yes.
I really like the point of distribution of holy name is a sublime example of giving out charity.
Oh yeah, yeah, that is nice. I had one more note, and I just make sure I'm not missing something big. This was 325.12. Maitreya said, after hearing of his mother's uncontaminated desire for transcendental realization, the Lord thanked her within himself for her questions, and thus, his face smiling, he explained the path of the transcendentalists who are interested in realization. And oh, I know, it's a great purport, but we've run out of time. And it is another of the very important dialogues in the Srimad Bhagavatam, definitely within the third canto, this discussion between Lord Kapiladev and his mother Devahuti. And in the beginning of that, she says, I'm completely tired of material life, so please tell me everything I have to do. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivinoda ki jai, Gaur Premanande Hari Varman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Hey, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman, Natari Armarman.